Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Cool. On air, no issues. Oh, hell, knock wood. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room. Yes, indeed, free and easy. All capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderators Sparky and Lottie. Sparky, being a third stage guild navigator, has this evening folded space to become Man Cave. Yep. And he is joined in the room at the moment by Doctor Who, Jug of Punch, King of Cups, Little Gray, City of Being, Texas Tea, and, well, me. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And this is Titanic Tuesday on The Horn. Yes, indeed. The Horn being, of course, a listener-supported radio effort. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Moment. And by listener supported, I mean that there's no ads here. There's no ads for stuff you don't want, no ads for stuff you don't need. There aren't any ads for stuff you do want or do need. That just lets us, you know, that just lets us be that free. I mean, for instance, it would be great to advertise Nancy's yogurt or Ben and Jerry's ice cream, but what would happen if there was an E. coli outbreak, and it turned out, because you know E. coli is E. coli, that you know some poo had gotten into that stuff? Oh, how do I talk about that? So it's better just not to have the ads, right? Right. But that means that we wind up being listener supported. And, of course, we are probably the single biggest bargain, without a doubt, the single biggest bargain in progressive broadcasting right now, because we just try to raise $200 an evening. And even when we don't, we somehow manage to get on the air the next night. And that's where we are right now. We got about $500 to raise to get out of the hole. 300 previous, 200 for tonight. You know, that's one at 500, two at 250, four at 125, five at 100, 10 at 50, 20 at 25, 40 at 1250, 80 at 6 1/4. You get the idea. Mm-hmm. The PayPal interface is over at headonradionetwork.com. And just go there, fill out the stuff, leave the stuff blank about what you do and who you do it for, and just get to the next screen, and that's where you make your choice between PayPal, credit cards, what have you. Yeah, who knew? We take credit cards. I kind of didn't. But anyway, we do, and we've got $500 to raise this evening. So, there we go. It's about 4 minutes past the hour. This program is live. And it is the 15th day of March, 2016. Mm-hmm. 2,060 years ago today, the world changed in ways that we still feel. Absolutely. From a Eurocentric point of view, I would say this day is probably the most momentous day in the Western European history of the last 2,100 years. For the very simple reason that the assassination of Gaius Julius Caesar set off reverberations that would have impacts across geographical boundaries, across time, and all around the planet. There's no telling what happens if Julius Caesar lives. You know, he was getting ready to head out of town to go and punish the Parthians when he was murdered. No one else had been very much good at it, but Caesar had a way of getting things done. Think about it. Had he gone and been able to do that? Any number of... Who knows? Maybe he would have killed an early relative of Muhammad. Not saying that's a good or a bad thing, but it seems pretty clear that had he survived, Christianity probably never would have happened. Yeah, how about that? The Jewish zealots probably would not have lost their minds and their lives, because among other things, Julius Caesar was not inimical to Judaism because of his upbringing. And that all goes by the boards because of a bunch of spoiled rich people. Make no mistake, it was no popular uprising that led to the assassination of Julius Caesar. Michael Parenti did a wonderful job in his book, The Assassination of Julius Caesar. And it really is. It's worth revisiting from time to time. Because Caesar was assassinated by a bunch of incredibly wealthy people who felt threatened by the fact that he kept demonstrating a willingness to distribute some of the wealth toward the poorer classes, to let them eat food at government expense. No libertarian, Caesar. The Romans were like us, and yet at the same time very unlike us. But one thing was for certain. When the 1% in ancient Rome felt threatened, the people who were trying to do some good for the 99% died. This extends to the brothers Gaius and Tiberius Gracchus, the brothers Gracchi. Yeah, it extends to Caesar himself. Mm-hmm. And of course, a lot of mythology is built up around it. It is Shakespeare, not any of the ancient sources, who give us the phrase "et tu, Brute." The ancient sources tell us that whatever his final words were, they were uttered in Greek, because the Roman nobility took pride in being schooled in Greek, much as, for instance, English nobility deemed it a sign of breeding to be able to speak French, courtly French. Lots of terms in legal language that comes down to this day come from courtly legal French, tort being one of them. And no, it has nothing to do with soccer or Vienna or dessert at all. So that. But the parallels are striking. When the rich feel threatened, when the oligarchs feel threatened, they lash out, and they do so in extreme violence. And in Caesar's case, the violence was directed toward him. this is that time of year that I always think, yeah, I want to be over there. And I do. I still do. It's way up the list. And I guess you'd probably have to do a little bit of negotiating and so forth with the folks who look over, look after, manage the forum in Rome. But where the Jesus freaks get all damp in their maiden forms about walking the Via Dolorosa at Easter, I feel a deep sense of abiding profundity about the idea of taking Caesar's walk. And it would have to begin in the forum. Because Caesar, you see, lived in public housing. Other rulers, other wealthy oligarchs in Rome lived up on the Palatine Hill, above the forum, from which we get the words palatial and palace. But Caesar occupied the dual position at the time of dictator for life, and dictator didn't necessarily have the negative connotations that it has now. It meant that his word was law. Dictators were brought in by the Roman Republic from time to time to deal with cases of extreme civil unrest and put things back to order. And Caesar had done a pretty good job of it. He fixed the calendar, among other things. But he was both dictator for life and Pontifex Maximus. Yes, 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 yes. That's the name we let the Pope at Rome have, or he took for himself. But the real Pontifex Maximus was a Roman pagan, if you will, religious position, the chief priest. And the chief priest oversaw religious practices in the temple of Jupiter Optimus Maximus up on the Capitoline Hill, one of the seven hills. But he was also in charge of the Vestal Virgins. And the Vestal Virgins were the key to Rome's good fortune. Also, the Vestal Virgins were administrative clerks. They were in charge of keeping it. When one wrote one's will, one took it and stored it with the Vestal Virgins. And so the Temple of the Vestals was also the repository of wills in Rome. Sort of like the office of probate in modern eras. And so the temple sat there, and right next to it sat the Domus Publica, the public house. And that was the official residence of the Pontifex Maximus. That's where Caesar lived. And so it was on the morning of March the 15th, 44 BC, he, having given his lictors, his bodyguards, the day off. Yeah, I know, it's the 2060-year-old version of deciding to ride through Dallas, a town full of right-wing maniacs in a convertible car with the top down. But he had discharged his bodyguards, and he was walking to a meeting of the Senate, because he had to attend this meeting of the Senate before he headed off to the Parthians to deal with them. Only there was no one building that was the Senate of Rome. The Senate was the body, not the building. And that Senate session had been planned to be held in the temple of Venus Victrix, which was appended to the tail end of the Theater of Pompey. Pompey, by this time, having been dead, had his head lopped off by some Egyptians. And so the walk would start at the ruins of the Domus Publica, down the Via Sacra, the Holy Way, around the Capitoline Hill, and out onto what was then called the Campus Martius, the field of Mars, the field of the god of war, which is where young Romans went to learn their military craft. It was where armies assembled before going on campaign, because it was outside the effective boundaries of Rome. Armies were not allowed to enter Rome. And it was also where Romans went to vote. But because it was outside Rome proper, it's also where Pompey built himself a theater, because it was illegal to have permanent theaters inside the official boundaries of Rome. The outlines of Pompey's theater can still be seen from an above ground view. You can take that walk. It's kind of like, again, well, for modern purposes, it's like, you know, going for a little stroll through Dealey Plaza and looking over at the grassy knoll. Because, you see, the murder of Caesar really was a conspiracy. A conspiracy by the wealthy to murder a man who they deemed was infringing upon their rights and prerogatives to shit on the poor whenever they felt like it. So, it would be a fun walk to take. But you'd have to start, yeah, probably about 6 o'clock in the morning. I don't know, maybe 7. That part's kind of fluid. The Romans delineated their days kind of strangely. But it would be an absolutely fascinating walk to take. I was really proud of Margie. She posted on Facebook today, she posted a picture of a bottle of creamy Caesar dressing with a steak knife in it to commemorate the day. Proud of that girl. Proud of that young woman. Carol Baker, Queen of the Minions, asks, how many Girl Scout camps did they have to raid to find enough Vestal Virgins? Oh, no. It was a lucrative undertaking because it was not a life sentence. You went into the Vestal Virgins, and it was usually families with clout. You went into the Vestal Virgins at about, I think, 7, and you were out by 32, at which time you've still got a life ahead of you, and you, unlike most women, have absolute control over your property, and once you're done being a Vestal Virgin, it's not like they kick you out broke. You're actually doing pretty well for yourself. So there was, any Vestal Virgin who stops being one while she's still supposed to be one, then it gets a little dodgy, because then they bury you alive. Yeah. But apparently it served, I mean, the burying alive part served as a pretty good deterrent, because they didn't bury very many Vestal Virgins alive. But I love classical civilization, and I think it would be wonderful to take that walk and then just sort of wander over a little bit, a couple of piazzas away and have a little lunch snack and a flagon of wine and, yeah, right. Someday. I don't know, maybe when the Soros check gets here. I know. Everybody's just kind of vibrating about the primaries today. Florida, North Carolina, Ohio, Illinois, Missouri. I've seen photos from all over, from all 5 of those states. That was 5, 1, 2, yeah, 3, 5 states. Ciphering. I can't be trusted. People have been posting pictures. You know, I voted for Bernie today. Haven't seen a lot of, yay, I went and voted for Hillary, I'm so excited. Haven't seen a lot of those. But, you know, maybe that's just because. It's probably confirmation bias. So it remains to be seen how it works out. Bernie probably loses in Florida, but, you know, it's a Confederate state, so we expect that. He'll probably lose in North Carolina. Again, see Confederate state, Supra. Hillary's campaign is an absolute juggernaut to become president of the Confederacy. At least, Democratic-wise, it is. She'd get stomped into a mud hole by Republicans under the, you know, in a general election there, which, if she's the nominee, she'll get stomped into a mud hole throughout the Confederacy in November. She will not carry one single Confederate state. Oh, maybe Virginia. Maybe Florida. Not really anything else. But it's Ohio we're watching, and Illinois, you know, where she was endorsed by her dear friend Rahm Emanuel. And Missouri, where Carol Baker went and did the right thing and cast her vote for Bernie. So now we wait. Ohio's Eastern time zone, so, you know, polls will close, what, next couple of hours? Oh, the Marianas. Thank you, Marty. The Marianas Protectorate are voting today. Okay. Illinois, Central Time. Missouri, Central Time. So, and you know, with primaries as opposed to caucuses, the various news organizations are sitting there with a finger on the button, waiting to call the race the second after the polls close, because they think they know. Yeah, I know, Gerald. I know. Gerald just noting, the Soros check still hasn't arrived? Damn! His people promised me it would be there by last Friday. Oh, did they tell you the check was in the mail? Yeah, I bet they told you some other things too, didn't they, Gerald? Yeah. Right. So we wait. And wait. And wait. Until then, like I said, it's Titanic Tuesday, and there's other stuff to talk about. Now, you remember what Titanic Tuesday is all about. Titanic Tuesday is named in honor of something that Jim heard years ago now over in America's fifth smallest radio market, Beckley, West Virginia, when the morning right-wing blatherer took a call from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing listeners. They would call him in when he'd started to read the newspaper for too long and people were falling asleep at the wheel and, you know, hitting phone poles and stuff. It was public service. But one morning, one of them called in and said, Steve, how come you reckon it is there's seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? I mean, we ain't nowhere near the ocean. Because being right-wingers and upstanding Bible-believing, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexuals, well, that evolution just ain't for them. Yeah, you can tell by the sort of leathery, hairy quality of their knuckles. Gerald says, "Well, yeah, they did tell me the check was in the mail. I'll call them in the morning. I'm sure it's just an oversight." Get right on that, would you, Gerald? Thank you. But and he answered, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates." Mm-hmm. Yeah. Still no word on the movement of the Titanic deviled egg dish. Right. So we celebrate right-wing attempts at thinking. Right-wing attempts at cognition. On days like this. On Tuesdays. And wow, oh wow, oh wow, oh wow. Do I have a dandy. Our buddy Benedict pointed this one out to me. and it's a Lulu. Now, for those of you who have been listening for quite a while, you might recall the name of a guy. Kevin Williamson. Kevin Williamson. When I first ran across Kevin Williamson, he had just published a thing in, I think it was National Review Online or something. He had just published a thing in which he reported back from a safari, a sojourn in eastern Kentucky. Where he discovered that hillbillies were engaged in a vigorous black market of Pepsi. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was really quite stupid. But then again, Kevin Williamson apparently excels in quite stupid. Witness the fact that he is a centerpiece to Titanic Tuesday this evening. This guy's a winner. Big time. He wrote, something about poor America. And, of course, I live in Appalachistan, so, you know, we qualify. And it's behind a firewall, so I don't have the whole thing. Yeah, more's the pity. Probably make 3 hours out of it. As it is, this will probably eat up the remainder of the filibobster this evening. Over the weekend, he decided to pull the rubber mask off and display the fullness of his and the National Review's and the right-wing Republican elite, you know, the people who know what to do with that little three-pronged fork when they bring the oysters around. No, Trump voters, no, you don't stab each other with it. No, they're sick and tired of these people who would support Donald Trump and ruin all of their fun and pull the other rubber mask off the Republican Party. You know, the one that's spent a generation or so saying that everything would be just fine if we could just do something about those other people, my friends. Yes, those others. Those Mexicans, those Negroes. Right? Those women. Those feminazis. Those liberals, those progressives. Or as he as I found out last week, Flush Flimball refers to Senator Sanders now as Crazy Bernie. Well, I mean, he does that in between, you know, when he's gobbling up the OxyContin and the meth and, you know, for the refreshing burst of flavor. It's kind of like chewing peppermint and double mint at the same time for him. Mm-hmm. But Kevin Williamson was the one who declared himself the messenger of Republican reality. And they've been rubbing elbows, and they've been shaking babies and kissing hands and pretending they gave a fuck what happened in the trailer courts of America all the way back to Ronald Reagan, and they're just sick of it. So Kevin Williamson, writing in the National Review Online, has declared that white people, well, you know, those kinds of white people, the kinds of white people who vote for T-Rump, well, they're just not very... our kind of people. Let's see. I was checking out a call coming in there, and this is Kevin, and I don't want to keep him waiting or anything because he's a first-time caller. Hey, Kevin. Oh, wrong button. Sorry. Hey, Kevin. Oh, Kevin. Kevin, there you are. I hear you.
Bob?
Yeah.
Oh, this is Kevin, yeah. Now, I was listening to, you know, I scan corporate media now. I don't watch it. You know, I listen to you and Malloy and Progressive Voices, and that's it. But I just turned on, you know, I was watching a Hoop game last night, and after the game, I turned on Lawrence O'Donnell at probably about midnight, I don't know, or when he's on late at the rerun show. So he's going all Edward R. Murrow on me. And now, back in the summertime and back in the fall, MSNBC, I know, okay, we know Fox is bad, right? But now we have CNN, and we can't let CNN off the hook with Trump or MSNBC.
No. The entire for-profit media are to blame for this.
Yeah, they gave him free airtime. Matter of fact, somebody, I'd never agree with Max Boot, On a one Twitter thing, he goes, so Donald Trump gets free airtime on these networks. He goes, you know, so I blame the... The corporate media can't all of a sudden say, oh, Trump is awful. He's awful. When they've enabled Mr. Trump over and over again. Saturday Night Live, they give him free airtime. They have him on. He's a big joke. All these, 60 Minutes, they legitimize him. And matter of fact, Wolf Blitzer, today I turned him on for about 5 minutes and was sick to my stomach. He had a Bernie Sanders, I don't know, he had Bernie Sanders, a surrogate on, I don't know his name. He played a quote by Trump about Bernie Sanders, and then it was going to legitimize Trump. I said, what, is Wolf becoming the spokesperson for Donald Trump's campaign now? Because it wasn't a journalistic question, it was a propaganda question. I'm livid about, that's why, you know, I don't listen to these people. You're much more legitimate to me than these idiots, you know?
Well thank you for that.
If I had a lot of money, I'd give it to you. I'm a poor slob here in Connecticut.
Well, we all are.
You know, but I'd love to give you all kinds of dough, because I tell you one thing, the fees we pay for these cable networks are, I wish it could be a la carte. I'd get rid of MSNBC, Fox News, and I'd get rid of MSNBC, CNN, and all of them would be gone if I could do a la carte on DirecTV. You know?
I do, Kevin. And the fact of the matter is, one of the things that turned me against my latest attempt to have, you know, TV, is that the basic subscription is Electric Jesus every other channel.
Yeah.
With, you know, and Fox and CNN, but no, you gotta go up into the higher math channels to get MSNBC. You know, and that was back when, and that was back before they turned into whatever it is they're being turned into.
Yeah, and then all these ball players coming out for Trump, that makes me sick to my stomach, too, because, you know, but then again, I don't know, this guy had a good article about Major League Baseball, why it's so out of touch these days with, you know, then you have Bruce Gossage going off on all these players, you know, last week, you know, and I think somebody said on in reference to Trump, Bruce Gossage wants to make baseball American again or something, you know, great again or something.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah, well, Phyllis Schlafly
and,
did
and,
that
know,
a couple of weeks
Phyllis,
ago.
You know what, Phyllis Schlafly, you heard about
yeah.
Phyllis Schlafly, right?
Right, yeah.
About she doesn't want any foreign players in baseball. Did you hear about that?
Oh, yeah, we covered it a couple of weeks ago.
Okay, I didn't realize that. I'm sorry, I probably didn't catch your show, but I saw that. I catch your show most nights, but not every night, but I'm not going to lie to you.
Well, we're not. Look, there's no penalty involved. I mean, it's okay.
But I try to. But I wanted to call you for a long time, you know, because I think you have a superb show, and it's much more lively than all these other. You know, you can actually talk to you. So you call these other shows, you talk for 5 seconds, and they cut you off.
Yeah, that's enough about you. Let's talk about me.
No, yeah. I'm not talking about. No, I said you call these other shows.
No, that's what I call it. That's enough about you. Let's talk about me. It's the Rush Limbaugh model.
But even some of these liberal channels have that model, though. They adhere to it, too. Not you, but I'm saying that a lot of them do. Maybe I don't, for what reason, I don't know. But no, I appreciate your show, and I don't want to, you know, then again, I don't want to monopolize your show. I want other people to talk, too, and maybe you want to say stuff, too. You probably got some stuff you want to talk about tonight without me. But I just wanted to voice that because I'm just scratching my head last night saying, am I the only one? I can't be the only one thinking this, that all of a sudden Lawrence O'Donnell wants to get all Edward R. Murrow on me now. You know? I mean, you remember when Lawrence O'Donnell went off on Glenn Greenwald a few years ago on his show?
Yeah.
I mean, that was pretty bad on Mr. O'Donnell's part because he just didn't agree. You know, he went all off. I just couldn't believe how much of a baby Lawrence O'Donnell got there, you know? You know, so I'm not big on anybody. I even think Rachel and Chris Hayes should just bolt that channel. You know, I can't believe.
Yeah, but
that.
The problem, Kevin, is to where. I mean, there's nobody out there that's going to hire Rachel and pay her the money that she's getting paid.
Oh, I know,
or Chris.
I know. I don't know. I guess I'm making an idealistic point. I guess, but I just wonder sometimes how you can. Stomach all that, you know.
It's about the bread. You know, if there's a whole bunch of bread and just a little smear of shit between them, you can the more bread, the more you can tolerate.
Noam Chomsky pretty much has said it over the years about, you know, there's a certain parameter you can talk about, and then you can't really go outside that parameter. You know that, you know, it's corporate censorship is exactly what it is. I don't hear the libertarians talk about corporate censorship. They talk about how the government does this and that, but they never talk about corporate censorship. So that's why they're bankrupt in my mind, the libertarians. They, you know, I don't show them any love because they don't see corporate greed and they don't see corporate muscle. You know.
Right. No, they are constitutionally blind to it.
Yeah, but the Constitution's, you know, you can pull, you know, people selectively, like the Bible, they pull out things they like about the Constitution, and then, of course, when it comes to free speech, you know, we can kill you, right? We're going to kill you at our rally, right?
Exactly.
Or I'll pay for your legal fees, right?
Oh, but now he says he never said that.
Well, that's a typical right-winger, right?
And that's...
You know, Sarah Palin... you know, I was kidding myself. You know, Paul O'Neill, who supports Trump, works for the Yes Network, and he's a jerk. You know, he works in media, and he supports Donald Trump. So I wonder if she's referring to Mr. O'Neill. You know, she says media are thugs, right? So that's a broad statement, but that's ignorance for you.
Well, did you catch that thing where I guess Tad was involved in some horrible snowmobiling accident? And he was, and he's in ICU, but she decides to stay out there on the grift, on the hustle, because she.
Yeah.
What kind of biblical? I mean, look, I don't ascribe to it, but she says she does. What kind of biblical wife is she? Shouldn't she be on a plane back to where the hell ever? To be.
Well, yeah, but these right wingers, you know, they talk about. The more they talk about family values and morality, the more I want to get my vomit bag out. Because when people talk like that, you have to start wondering. You know, you can't believe people like that. You know, you're compensating for something that went awful in their life. You know, and my mother's devout Catholic, so but she actually lives it. She's not a judgmental woman. So there are some people I know that actually live it. Most people don't. And but you know, one last thing I wanted to mention to you, because remember when Palin was always talking about, she ratcheted up a lot of the Obama hate with McCain, and when she said that, remember she used to always say that Barack Obama pals around with terrorists. Remember that?
Oh yeah.
And remember, Mr. Joe Lieberman was right behind that, and I'll never forget her saying that. And Joe Lieberman is clapping and smiling behind that. So even Mr. Lieberman has some answering to do about this. There are a lot of people that have allowed this to happen, and people can't start feigning ignorance now, and we can't allow these people to feign ignorance. Is what, you know, we got to resist this feigning of ignorance by these people, and that's pretty much what my overall theme is here. My overall thesis is about, you know, and listening to Lawrence O'Donnell last night, you know, I wanted to barf, because his network has helped in the rise of Trump, and all these networks have. So for any of these networks now to feign ignorance about why Trump got out here like this, well, they gave him free airtime, right? And weren't they bragging that, wow, Trump doesn't have to run commercials, he's got all this free airtime on these networks, right? Wasn't that the refrain we heard a lot?
Yeah, it was, yes.
Okay, well, no, I'm just asking, and maybe I'm wrong here.
No, Donald Trump treated the for-profit media like his personal small-town talk radio show.
I just want to make sure I'm not you know, hearing voices.
they wouldn't let any of the other mainstream candidates call in and not show up on the set, but him, they did. Because they deemed him to be an entertainment.
Yep. Yeah. It's just amazing, you know, now I have to listen to people writing, and there are so many articles out now, how did Trump get like this? How did this happen? I mean, are people that stupid that they got to even ask that question?
If they're consistent watchers of for-profit media, I think the answer, Kevin, is, well, yes, they are.
Yeah. Well, hey, Bob, I'm gonna let you go, but you know, because I don't want to monopolize your show, and I don't want to do that to you. And I'll call again and say hi to you. But it was a pleasure talking to you tonight.
Oh, it's an absolute pleasure. I'm glad you called, and you are welcome just any old time, Kevin.
Yeah. All right. Have a great night, Bob, and I'll listen to your show from here on out tonight. And have a great evening, and all your nice listeners who I listen to, I want to say hi to all of them too, because they're great people that call in. I get a lot of I don't know what other people say on your show over the years too, and I appreciate that too. So I want to look that up there too. Okay.
Wonderful. Thanks, Kevin. Have a good night.
Yeah. Nice chat with you. Have a great night, Bob. Thank
Bye
you.
Now. Well, that was a treat. First time caller. We've interacted on Twitter a couple of times, as Kevin notes. That's Kevin calling from Connecticut. It's about 17 minutes before the hour. And since Kevin was talking about T-Rump and the T-Rump phenomenon, please, 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 whatever deity, or no deity at all, Flying Spaghetti Monster, where's my guy? Please, after November, please let us never have to say his name again. Please. But anyway, over at National Review Online, because this dovetails. Kevin Williamson, who is not known for his high opinion of poor people, has decided to wash his hands of them once and for all. And he's doing it pretty much on behalf of the right wing intelligentsia. And he has declared that, well, after a generation of telling poor, poorly educated white folks that it was everybody else's fault, that it's actually theirs. That's the only way to put it. The white working class that finds itself... wait a minute, I think we're going to need our Thurston Howell voice. The white working class that finds itself attracted to the Trump has been victimized by outside forces. It hasn't. That's a lie. The white middle class may like the idea of Trump as a giant pulsing humanoid middle finger held up in the face of the cathedral. They may sing hymns to Trump the Destroyer and whisper darkly about globalists and, odious stupid term, the establishment. But nobody did this to them. They failed themselves. Yes, yes. Put another peasant on the fire. If you spend time in hardscrabble white upstate New York, or eastern Kentucky, or my own native West Texas, and you take an honest look. See, he had to move up east to learn how to talk with his teeth clenched. And you take an honest look at the welfare dependency, the drug and alcohol addiction, the family anarchy, which is to say the whelping of human children with all the respect and wisdom of a stray dog, you come to an awful realization. It wasn't Beijing. It wasn't even Washington, as bad as Washington can be. It wasn't immigrants from Mexico, excessive and problematic as our current immigration levels are. It wasn't any of that. Nothing happened to them. There wasn't some awful disaster. There wasn't a war or a famine or a plague or a foreign occupation. Even the economic changes of the past few decades do very little to explain the dysfunction and negligence and the incomprehensible malice of poor white America. So the gypsum business in Garbutt ain't what it used to be. Now, you may say that the funny voice is not necessary. I can't read it in any other. Because the venomous, bilious, dripping contempt that comes off of this walking, festering, suppurating pustule, you can't ignore it. Yes, he came out of West Texas, but Igumfu, my dear boy, Igumfu, old shoe, old chum. Do meet me at the tennis club on Sunday next. We'll hit a few and then play a rubber of bridge. Igumfu, you know, I got mine. You. But that's where his thesis fails. See, nothing happened to them. Something did happen to them. The National fucking Review happened to them. The right-wing politics and policies of the Heritage Foundation and the Competitive Enterprise Institute and the American Enterprise Institute and the Cato Institute happened to them. The year-in, year-out assault by conservative republicanism on the very idea that we have a United States Department of Education happened to them. Yeah. And I do love being described as hard scrabble. What is that, Scrabble, where you're only allowed words of four syllables or more? I just don't know. But this clown in a tux, you know, I don't care how fancy the tux is, the big bulbous red nose and the fright wig and the big floppy shoes are going to give you away as a clown. This clown ignores his own culpability and his party's culpability. Because I, too, grew up in that world. And I moved from one part of that world to another part of that world. Of course, the greatest expositor on this, God, it'd be nice if he was still around, Joe Bagent, Deer Hunting with Jesus. If you've never read it, yes, it deals with some Bush stuff and whatnot, but it's still viable. The fact that he's commenting on his present reality does not change the underlying truths. Or just go over to Joe Bagent, JoeBagent.com. Not right now. Write it down. And start reading. America, Why Your Peeps Be So Dumb is a good place to start. Or you can pick up the collection of his essays, Waltzing at the Doomsday Ball. But something did happen to them. We became a nastier people. And it wasn't because of something that happened overnight. Sure, here in Appalachia, we've been brawling in pool rooms and beer joints and honky-tonks since the first one went up. But there's still a larger analysis to be done. And yeah, it has to do with what kind of economy was handed to us. If you brutalize people in the workplace, they will brutalize each other in the public space. And make no mistake that most of these white people that Kevin Williamson is attempting to write about, and doing so rather poorly, are brutalized people. Some of the brutality backed off with the passage of the National Labor Relations Act in the FDR administration, and that social compact largely held up until Reagan. Oh, there were some losses along the way, but that compact mostly held. And so, yeah, you had angry white voters who were motivated by their racism and their bigotry to get out there and pack meeting halls to hear George Wallace in 1968 and 1972 and 1976. Sure. And they were packing those meeting halls in Wisconsin and Michigan and up in Massachusetts. Not just in Alabama, sunshine. No, hell no. But a lot of that stuff bubbled all along under the surface until we got to Reagan. And the GOP master plan was published writ large. It was the Southern Strategy of 1968, pressed down, shaken together, and given a big old booster shot of steroids. That's why it was the Reagan administration who killed off the Fairness Doctrine. Because they understood that if they could get people out there into the broadcast airwaves who could start preaching hate, then people would follow the hate. It is no accident that Rush Limbaugh begins to rise during the latter years of the Reagan administration. There had been others before him, but none had succeeded quite like him. And all of a sudden, the little liberal talkers, for instance, on the slate over at ABC Talk Radio, people like Michael Jackson out of Southern California, began to fade away. Nothing happened to them? Oh, yes, something happened to them. As that song that I'm fond of from the Rodgers and Hammerstein musical South Pacific goes, you've got to be carefully taught. And they were most carefully taught. They were fed a steady diet of other and illegals and uppity niggers and women who don't understand their place. And the entirely phony, ginned up, faked up, frauded up, rubed up concept of Christian persecution. Until they went from a simmer, from a seethe to a simmer to a boil. Yeah. And that boil rolled and rolled and rolled. And you know how you and there's a trick to keeping something boiling like that and not having it coming over the edges of the pot. And it was masterful what the Republican Party did during the 90s with the Clintons. Wall to wall Monica. The MENA airport. The Clinton Chronicles. Richard Mellon Scaife paying debt David Brock to go and slime up Anita Hill. Remember David Brock? Of course he's a partisan for Hillary now, but he's the one who came up with a little bit nutty, a little bit slutty to describe Anita Hill. In the Clarence Thomas hearings. But then comes the election in 2008 of Barack Obama. And they were finally loosed. The GOP really couldn't contain them anymore. And this country got covered in a toxic blanket of racist filth. So when Kevin Williamson says nothing happened to them, there wasn't some awful disaster. Yes, there was. And the awful disaster is called the Republican Party. The awful disaster is called conservatism. Hardcore, right-wing, proto-fascist conservatism. And then this. The truth about all these dysfunctional, I mean, you want to talk about getting your brown shirt on. The truth about these dysfunctional downscale communities is that they deserve to die. Not kidding. The National Review Online published that. And let's remember, communities are made of families, and families are made of people? Mommies? Daddies? Daddies, daddies? Mommies, mommies? Children? Grannies? Grandpas? Fetuses? They deserve to die. Economically, they are negative assets. Morally, they are indefensible. Forget all your cheap, theatrical Bruce Springsteen crap. Forget your sanctimony about struggling Rust Belt factory towns and your conspiracy theories about the wily Orientals stealing our jobs. The white American underclass is in thrall to a vicious, selfish culture whose main products are misery and used heroin needles. No kidding. He really wrote that. Really, really. I mean, does that just I mean, I'm generally not capable of being shocked. But I have to admit, in this case, if it was anyone but National Review, I would be. As it is, it's at least a moderate, surprising to a to some degree to see that these elitist snobs actually published that. Because they just told their base what they think of them. And it's really a little surprising. They've relied on them. They've been the shock troops in the culture war, cannon fodder in the culture war. They've hung on to the gun issue and the gay issue and the abortion issue solely for the purpose of getting these people, not those, these people out to the polls. It's the only thing that kept the Republican Party from sort of disappearing into the mists of time a generation ago. It's the only thing that got Ronald Reagan elected. Because there aren't enough Rockefellers and Rothschilds and Romneys out there to elect a goddamn dog catcher. But here it is. Now, there will be some kabuki involved. Because you can't, the Republican money can't just let this get out there and go unanswered. But the rubber mask really is off. Now, for people who have been paying attention to progressive broadcasters for almost any period of time, you know that we have said all along that this is exactly how the angry angry white people have been used in this country. Is there anyone among us who doubts that, well, frankly, poor white folks would do well under a Bernie Sanders administration? But apparently the conventional wisdom is that they could be chased away with nothing more than the word socialist. But I do. I take umbrage with this column. Cranky Scots-Irish that I am. Because them's my people. My people. Them's not my people. I is them. And make no goddamn mistake about it, I am. I'm the son of a coal miner who went on to become a furnace operator. I'm the son of a woman who had a magnificent mind and was denied college. I'm the product of generations that have been misused in Appalachia, who were thought to be worth nothing more than what they could do for some out-of-state coal boss. And I do damned well resent it when somebody like this Kevin Williamson, decides to drop trowel and take a big steamer. On people about whom he has no goddamned clue whatsoever. But he wasn't done. The white American underclass is enthralled to a vicious, selfish culture whose main products are misery and used heroin needles. Donald Trump's speeches make them feel good. So does OxyContin. What they need isn't analgesics, literal or political. They need real opportunity, which means that they need real change, which means that they need U-Haul. This little punk-ass prick doesn't even have the decency to make up his own jokes. That's an old, old, old Sam Kinison gag. About Ethiopia, no less. Don't send them food. Send them suitcases. They need it. They don't need another bag of rice. They need a U-Haul. Sam Kinison said a lot of funny stuff. That's one of the unfunniest things he ever said. But there it is. They've decided, anyone who has decided to vote for T-Rump instead of, say, you know, a good candidate like Jeb Bush, Well, there's obviously something wrong with them. And the Republican establishment, having been jilted, they're out there trashing their lover now. Keying the car, if you will. Maybe slashing the tires. Or, you know, leaving little dead animals on the doorstep. Of the trailer, mind you, the trailer. It has to be a trailer. But there was a war, and there was a famine, and there was a plague. And there was an occupation. My particular state and my particular region has been occupied for over 100 years. And brutally so. And see, the people Kevin Williamson's writing about are never going to read National Review Online. Hell, I don't read National Review Online. It's online, so it doesn't even have the merit of having a paper form that I can use to, line the kitty litter box. And for all that, Miss Mushu would probably rebel at the idea herself. She doesn't take kindly to folk like Kevin Williamson. And that line, the economic changes of the past few decades do very little to explain the dysfunction and negligence. They do a lot. Economic collapse does horrible, horrible things to families. And we live in an America where you can be sort of wobbling along, almost okay, and all it takes is an engine blowing. All it takes is a transmission dropping out. All it takes is one good illness or a legal fuck up. And all of a sudden, all you can see around you is stuff crumbling. And that's not just Appalachia. That's not just West Virginia. That's not just the South. That's the whole United States of America. By, and I want to make sure that I'm clear on this, by design. And so at 13 minutes past the hour, we come to the end of the filibobster. We got $500 to raise this evening, and we are still at $500 to raise this evening. This is a tough way to run a radio network, please believe me. All help is good help. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be back. Bruce Springsteen going out just for you, Kevin Williamson. You dick.
I come from down in the valley where Mr. when you're young, they bring you up to do like your daddy done. Me and Mary, we met in we drive out of this valley down to where the fields were green. We go down to the river and into the river we dive. Oh, down to the river we drive. Then I got married. My 19th birthday.
No wedding day smiles, no walk down the aisle, no flowers, no wedding dress. That night we went down to the river, then anew the river we'd die. Oh, down to the river we did ride. We're the Johnstown Company, but lately there ain't been much work on account of the economy. Now all them things that seem so important, well, mister, they vanished right into the air. Now I just act like I don't remember. Mary acts like she don't care. But I remember us riding in my brother's car, her body tan and wet down at the reservoir. At night on them banks I'd lie awake and pull her close just to feel each breath she'd take. Now those memories come back to haunt me. They haunt me like a curse. Is a dream a lie that don't come true? Or is it something worse that sends me down to the river? Oh, I know the river is dry. That sends me down to the river tonight. Down to the river, my baby and I.
It's Tuesday, March 15, 2016.
No state has more at stake than Florida does, and no city has more at stake than Miami, the city in which we are sitting.
In what could be their final primary debates, Democrats talk action on climate change while Republicans remain in denial. 6 million Floridians could be impacted by rising sea levels, plus February 2016's shocking temperature record.
All of those shocks and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
One of the reasons why the climate is changing is because the climate has always been changing.
And one of the reasons Marco Rubio is losing is because he's always been a loser. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, I don't know how many debates it took. I think we've had about almost 20. But finally, the Republicans were asked
a question about climate change in what could be the final primary election debate for the Republicans.
I know. It was pretty shocking and amazing, and I have to say, I liked it.
Even though all they did is respond with wingnut denier talking points?
Yes. Well, at least the public got to hear about climate change and rising sea levels at both of the Democratic and the Republican primary debates that were hosted by CNN in Miami, Florida. A coalition of South Florida mayors whose towns are already grappling with constant nuisance flooding have asked the candidates what they will do to address rapidly rising seas caused by global warming. Both of the Democratic presidential candidates accept mainstream climate science and have developed detailed plans to prepare the nation's infrastructure and reduce the use of fossil fuels that cause climate change. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton emphasized expanding renewable energy to cut emissions and finding common ground with congressional Republicans to rebuild the nation's infrastructure.
Good luck with that.
But we do have to invest in resilience and mitigation while we are trying to cut emissions and make up for the fact that this is clearly man-made and man-aggravated.
For his part, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders attacked Republicans' climate change denial as the product of the powerful influence of the fossil fuel industry in campaign contributions.
When you have Republican candidates for president and in Congress telling you that climate change is a hoax, which is Donald Trump and other candidates' position, what they are really saying is we don't have the guts to take on the fossil fuel industry.
Republican presidential candidates Donald Trump and Ted Cruz do call climate science a hoax and a fraud. But at the Republican debate in Miami, also hosted the following day by CNN, Ohio Governor John Kasich first said he accepted man-made climate change and then questioned it.
We don't know how much humans actually contribute, but it is important we develop renewables.
But Florida Senator Marco Rubio answered his worried Florida mayors and constituents with a flood of denial, running the gamut of well-worn denier myths. Here are just a few.
But as far as a law that we can pass in Washington to change the weather, there's no such thing. There would be no change in our environment. Sea level would still rise. All these other things that are happening would continue to go on. Because these other countries like India and China are more than making up in carbon emission for whatever we could possibly cut. I am not going to destroy the U.S. economy for a law that will do nothing for our environment.
Wow, that's a lot of Republican denial talking points all in a row.
I know.
From the same guy.
Shoved into one spot. And, of course, he's flat out wrong. But, you know, notice that he rejects the man-made contribution to climate change. Except when it's China and India, because when they do it, it does have an impact, but there's nothing that we can do as the United States.
And Marco Rubio and John Kasich, they're the sane ones, right?
Yeah, supposedly. And now a new study from NOAA, published on Monday, finds that according to new updated flood maps that take into account coastal population growth and development, up to 6 million Floridians could be impacted by rising sea levels by the end of the century if society does not act on climate change.
Did you mention that Marco Rubio is the U.S. senator from Florida?
Yep. But of course, the planet isn't paying attention to politics. Scientists at NASA say they were shocked that last month, February 2016, smashed global heat records. To be clear, February 2016 was not the hottest month ever recorded. That was July 2015. But February's temperature spike jumped above the long-term average by the biggest margin ever recorded. It broke the record that was set just in January.
So in January, we broke the record for records.
Yes, for the biggest departure from the average temperature.
And now in February, we broke the record from January.
That's right.
Things are going great.
Yep, it's changing fast. Now, this is temporary and influenced by El Nino, but the rest, they say, is pushed by global warming.
For more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Don't forget, you can download our reports anytime via Stitcher, TuneIn, or iTunes, where we hope you'll stop by and give us a good review. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Travel in.
I got the mic on. 25 minutes past the hour. This is the Horn for Titanic Tuesday, the 15th. the Ides of March 2016. Brother Deacon Asa notes Marco Rubio's statement. One of the reasons why the climate is changing is that the climate has always been changing. Asa says, that, Bob, has to be the intellect, Titanic intellect statement of the century. That's right up there with the internet is not a big truck. Of course it's not. It's a series of tubes. Note coming in from Michael in Madison, subject line, clenched teeth. Going back to Kevin Williamson there. The funny voice is absolutely necessary. This is possibly the most ridiculous bit of wealth-splaining I have ever heard. He's just looking for a home, Kevin is. You know how wingnut welfare works. He's only a part of the way up the ladder. He's just writing for National Review online. He wants to make it to the bigs. Yeah. Meanwhile, Ron in Raleigh says, hey, Bob, this editorial was in the paper today. I think you might find it enlightening. Subject line of Ron's note is, what Trump voters really want to say. P.S. Hillary dropped in on Southeast Raleigh today. Black neighborhood. Kissed a few babies and acted like she gave a damn about the people there. Go and get me a baby. I want to kiss a baby. Go get me a baby, huh? Yeah. Now, dang it, where'd that thing go? Oh, there it is. And by the way, one line is occupied, and I'm going to it momentarily. The other line, the Skype line, Bob Kincaid Horn, Skype to Skype from anywhere on the planet for free, is open, as is line one, which is the same line, 304-574-8178. Once you say, well, it's Lindy West says, rhinestones twinkling around the perimeter of her shades, corn silk curls undaunted by the Pensacola sun. Elizabeth Kemper, a supporter of Donald J. Trump, is all certainty. She is fed up. You know, this country is so dang political correct, she tells a CNN reporter. I'm afraid to say what I really feel, you know? Kemper is blazing, passionate, incredulous. I think this country better go back to some of those values. Some of the values my parents grew up with, my grandparents grew up with. Whatever was wrong, they could point it out and tell you. Lindy West continues and says, once you say he says what I'm afraid to say and point to a man who is essentially a 24/7 fire hose of unequivocal bigotry, you've said what you're afraid to say, so how afraid could you have been in the first place? The phrase is a dodge, a way to acknowledge that you're aware it's a little naughty to be a misogynist xenophobe in 2016, while letting like-minded people know with a conspiratorial wink that you're only pretending to care. It's a wild grab for plausible deniability. How can I be a white supremacist when I'm just your nice grandpa? An artifact of a culture in which some people believe that it's worse to be called racist than to, you know, be a racist. Now, I suspect the hand-wringing is going to continue. Jim tells me that, Chicken Noodle News? Was it Jim who told me that? Hold on here. We'll find out. Yeah, Florida, Trump, and Clinton. No surprise. But somewhere, Marco Rubio is looking down at those high-heeled shoes and saying, I spent all that money on what happened. People like me. No, Marco, people don't like you, buddy. People don't like you. Meanwhile, in regard to the Williamson piece, Steve in New York says, oh, my dearest Robert, they're not the right people. We just can't have them shallowing our precious gene pool. Goddamn right we can't. It's already so damn shallow you can't drown a piss ant in it. Yeah. So let's run over and see what Jim's got to say down in Louisiana, Stan. Are you above water, Jim?
Oh, yeah, man. I tell you what was it. Friday night, that's when it, a whole bunch of rain and all sorts of fun and hijinks. I'm sure glad there's no climate change.
Yeah, that happens all the time down there, right?
Well, it does periodically, but, you know, we set records, okay?
Well, that's what I mean. You don't set records all the time. Well, I mean, at least you used to.
No, but it's just like on the Green News report, when they bring up the fact that out of the last 16, 17 years, and this one is another record, we keep on setting higher and higher temperatures, which, you know, to me means is more, that just brings more moisture into the atmosphere, which means more storms. You know, I'm not a meteorologist.
You've got that cause and effect thing right down to the ground.
It might be because of my Buddhist days, you know.
Yes.
Cause and effect, you know. But I love the Ides of March opening, man. That was, that was right on, too. I mean, and the JFK tie-in, similar, because I think that's kind of what happened. I think they saw Kennedy is going to be like too much, and
it's hard to not look at John and Bobby Kennedy if you've got any classical Larnin whatsoever, and not see the brothers Gracchi.
Yeah, that's what I was going to bring up. I know there were two. I remember, in fact, there was a history prof I had for that. I still remember his name, John O'Connor, and what was cool about him, he did great lectures, man. I mean, it's nothing like a history professor who can just, it was like he was performing almost, you know. And he made you care about it, and he made you see, or at least me, realize the importance of history, which apparently is lost on a lot of people. He also had him for the French Revolution, which was really cool, you know.
Oh, that would be fun.
That's why I can't forget the name Robespierre and how it started out for good, you know, it seemed like a good cause, but then, you know, when Robespierre and everything just ended up seeming to go to hell in a handbasket. But, those rich people who just, you know, what's so funny about that is,
well, they get right down homicidally testy, Jim.
Yeah, but they don't even realize that no man is an island, and not only that, who are they going to get to be their hand servants? It's just like with the Koch brothers and the like. We'll just pollute here, we'll pollute there, but I mean, you're running out of places to go, and just dump the poison and stuff, and instead of trying to figure out, instead of working on, spending the last 30-plus years working on alternative energy, and they could figure out a way, well, try and figure out a way to privatize that. I mean, how they did it in Nevada with the solar energy, I don't know all the information about that, but, people would get the solar panels and stuff, but then the energy company wants their share, because they're losing profits or something like that. I think that's the argument. And to me, that's lame. Isn't that capitalism? It's just like if you come up with a better product, you don't owe the company that you put out of business, but that seems the way capitalism's going on a lot of different levels. That seems to be part of the that new treaty that Obama signed about the company can sue you if you take away their estimated profits. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, that's like me suing somebody because I didn't win the lottery. I mean, you're a lawyer. Do you think I have an angle on that?
I'm not a lawyer, but no, you don't have, no. You can't, no, just can't.
Not even I went and begged and pleaded?
No, not even special pleading. No, sorry.
Does that have anything to do with me not being the super wealthy?
That has to do with the fact that it's not legally cognizable. Now, if you could prove fraud at the Lottery Commission, and you being Louisiana, it's an interesting prospect, because I think one of the last great lottery frauds was perpetrated by the Louisiana State Lottery Commission.
Yeah, back in the old days, I'm sure the new one's much much more straightforward and honest and everything.
I got you some good news, courtesy of Carol Baker.
Yes.
Hispanics, Latinos in Illinois are voting for Bernie 65-35 over Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton.
Man, I hope somehow she gets really, I hope it really goes strong for Bernie tonight.
We knew he was going to lose in the Confederacy again. The Confederacy just doesn't like Bernie.
Well, that's the whole thing. And it's so lame. The mainstream media comes up with, well, Hillary's got the lead, but she's won nothing but southern states, which, as you said, and I knew the minute they started pointing, they'd start saying that. It's like, there's no way in hell Hillary's going to win one state in the South. Like you said, she might win Virginia and maybe one other state, and I doubt that. Because there's also, I don't know if you've noticed that a lot of people just don't like the Clintons and Hillary in particular for whatever reason, But that's not my imagination running away with me, is it?
No, it isn't.
It's like another thing. I ended up talking with this British chap. I was tweeting with this British chap, and he was kind of poking. We're talking politics, kind of, and it was like, I don't know. Like, he didn't think Bernie was that big of a difference. I mean, and I had to admit, if he gets elected and he doesn't have a majority in the Senate and the House, it's going to be hard for him to really do anything except stop things from happening. And it's up to the American people to wake up and do something about that. Even if I went door to door, I could only talk to so many people every day. And even on the horn and Malloy, there's only so many people listening. And most of them are already on my side anyway, I would say. So it's kind of... I try to make a difference, but,
I understand.
Also, what was the other thing I saw? You heard about the new Trump thing, the new website?
No.
No, you visit DonaldJTrump.com, and it changes every Trump to Trump.
Oh, nice. Very nice.
But I pass that on in case somebody hadn't seen it.
I'm sure he'll call somebody about that. And he's gonna there'll be a lawsuit. It'll be very big. It'll be the best lawsuit with the best people, the best lawyers, and they'll win.
It'll be huge.
Huge.
Well, the other weird thing is I don't understand why people think that Trump is doing this out of the goodness of his heart, and they can't see. It's the same old trick certain people are easy to, first of all, he's blaming somebody else, people with a little bit more pigment to their skin. That seems to be the whole key to this, a big part of it, to his campaign. I guess I've rambled on long enough.
I'm tired of it as phenomenon, and I know you are too. And probably, like Kevin was alluding to at the beginning of the program, I'm sickest of the for-profit media hand-wringing and pearl-clutching when he's their creature. I mean, by analogy, it's like Dr. Frankenstein running out of the lab down the hill from the castle into the village saying, "What did you people make me do?"
Yeah. And also another thing I noticed, I read a complaint, I think it was on some of the Hillary supporters, or, you know, how Bernie seems to talk about the same thing all the time. And, I've seen a couple of his speeches. I think he does a great speech. And he, you know, it's an hour. It's not a 20 minutes, over an hour. But he doesn't repeat. It's not all one issue. It comes naturally because I see where one leads to another. It's like dominoes. One thing leads to another. I mean, he'll probably start off with the same premise or to the uneducated or unenlightened. It seems like the same thing. But not only that, I mean, you hit about, I'm going to say he hits about 8 or 9, 10 different points. If you listen and you kind of take note of what he's saying, he's talking about 8 or 9, 10 different things every time I've heard, you know, watched the long speech. I mean, have you seen that? Have you noticed that? I mean, it's not just me being infatuated with, you know, the prosperity.
No, look, it's what politicians do. You have a platform. You talk about your platform.
Yeah. You know, I mean, if he just went off and started talking about other different things, they'd be jumping all over his case for being scatterbrained. First signs of senility or something. So, that's my personal observation. I'm going to let the rest of the Horn crew jump in. I said my piece.
All right, Jim. You have yourself a good evening, and stay above the floodwaters.
Oh, everything's good now. I mean, it was about 10 feet away from the back door Saturday
Jesus.
Morning. Yeah. In fact, the road was even blocked. You had to take the long way out, so.
Wow. Well, take care. Have a good
All
night,
right,
and we'll
too.
Talk soon. All right.
All right, disconnect.
Later. Our buddy Jim. And meanwhile, over to the other line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, can you hear me all right?
Yeah, what's happening, John?
Oh, not much. I don't know how solid this observation is, but it may not be universal, but I suspect. Oh, by the way, how you doing?
Great.
Yeah, I'm all right. Just doing the what is that one guy calls a wage slave or whatever the hell it is. But anyway, I've been running around the country in the last week or two since I last talked to you, and I've come kind of to a quasi-conclusion. I actually think to some extent that these aren't so much Trump's supporters as they're just pissed off at their world disappearing, and he's their little figurehead that they can articulate that. Because I've gone through Texas, Oklahoma, and places, especially in the real Confederate South, and I hear this all the time. They're pissed off at the Rubios and the Cruises and all the Washington establishment because they've been promising for 7, 8, 9 years, we're going to take away, get rid of Obamacare. Never happened. We're going to stop, you know, we're going to stop the damn jobs from leaving the country. Well, that never happened. And you can just take the list and just read down the list. All these, and I think this is to some extent, and again, I'm not being universal about it, but I think to some extent, this is birds coming home to roost.
Well, it absolutely is. And that bird has been flying around since 1979, and arguably since Reagan ran against Ford in 1976.
Yeah. So I hear this all the time. I sat with a in a restaurant, one of the so-called truck stops, and I was sitting next to a table with a bunch of the local rancher, you know, oil rigger kind of people, and, you know, they're close enough, and I kind of dialed myself into the conversation, and that was pretty much the basic thrust of it. And, I mean, this one old guy, God love him, he was a character to have, big, huge hat, cowboy boots that you could probably walk across the moon with, He said, I can't stand that fucking Trump. And I'm quoting the words, apologize for the saltiness. But he said, I can't stand this son of a bitch. But I'll be damned if any of those others are going to get in. And I'm going, damn, this guy is not voting for anything. He's just voting against everything. And I, like I said, it brought up an interesting conversation I had with a friend of mine that, how do I say this? He's retired now from the government services, but he used to work in those agencies that, have lots of letters and names, and, you got to sign a lot of confidential agreements that, unfortunately, are not that precise. But we got into a conversation about that whole second constitutional convention thing, and he brought up an interesting point, and I don't know if I subscribe to it or not. But he said, what better way to push for a constitutional convention but to have a portion of your electorate so angry that they'll blow the country out? And, like I said, I'm not going to place any great bets on it, but it does kind of peculiar. Trump, he's an egotistical son of a bitch, but he's reputed to be relatively smart. And I just cannot imagine that he actually thinks he's going to win. But if you take that embracement and say, okay, he thinks he's not going to win, then what's his end game?
Here's one for you. I don't know if you've heard this, but there have been reports of a bunch of Democrats crossing party lines in Ohio today to vote for Kasich.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, hopefully that inures to Bernie's benefit.
Well, they're doing that because they're kind of following in this, my feet. Those are a lot of people who are trying to follow the so-called plan, insert bunny ears here, to try to deny Trump. It's pretty much assumed he's going to win Florida. And I think one of my feet just kicked up that he in fact did. But,
Florida is Trump. Florida's Trump and Clinton. And Clinton is no surprise, but my God, to lose your home state on the Ides of March, Marco Rubio must be feeling downright Caesarean.
If he doesn't hold out,
too brute middle finger to his whole home state.
Well, if he doesn't bow out the next week, I'll be damn surprised. But the idea is that they pretty much suspect that he could win Florida without the Rubio couldn't pull the muscle and Bruce hated Florida. But the idea was, at least what we were talking last week was that if they could generate enough support to get Kasich to win Ohio, since he was fairly close anyway, then that would at least deny Trump numbers, hopefully, to keep him from getting over the top. Because if they can't keep him from going over the top, then they can't do the broker convention they're trying to set up. And that's been, another Bob was telling me this morning. He said that's what's going on all over the comm lines on the Republican side, especially in the Beltway. They're calling in the favors and all that stuff, because that's basically their game plan now, is to keep him below the 1237, go to the convention, and then because he can't get the 1237 with pledge votes, second round pledge votes go away and everybody's freewheeling, and then they'll try to shove.
Yeah, a so-called a brokered convention.
Right, that seems to be the plan, but. Now, I won't say I want this to happen, but part of my anarchist soul would almost have you'd be doing the Irish jig with a bottle of scotch in my hand to see it happen, because that would be the most amazing thing to see in the world, because these pissed off Trump voters would, at that moment in time, realize that this thing got stolen from them. And they will be impossible to work with from that point on. And the Republican Party will damn near blow up. And that'd be a damn good sight to see.
It remains to be seen.
Yeah, this is wild. The dice are rolling. I mean, my last couple of weeks has been nothing but. I have actually received a, and it's not fixed in stone yet because you know how Congress operates, but I have been selected as a witness to go to Congress in late July, early August for a congressional hearing on truck driver pay, about all the unpaid hours and the things that we do.
Right.
And so my company found out about it, so there's been some who his letters sent my way and you know, all that stuff. And so it's been interesting, and I'm becoming unfortunately more political than I really care to. But that's neither here nor there. But anyway, I will shall let you go and go to the next wonderful person who comes on to tell you their experiences.
All right, thank you, John. You drive careful now.
Yeah, thanks so much, Roger.
All right, bye now. Out on the road, our buddy John. Oh, let's see. Let's keep things rolling here. The stress line is open if you want to try that. It works for some, not so well for others. 304-663-HORN, 304-663-4676. And sorry to beat on it, but we are still $500 in the hole, and we'll be $700 in the hole for prayer meeting Wednesday if something good doesn't happen pretty quick. This is a great way not to have a progressive radio network. Because we go month to month. That's all there is to it. Let's see. Jim is keeping up with the returns. He tells me that Ohio has been called for Kasich and Bernie Sanders. We'll take a moment there. Yes. Thank you very kindly. Our buddy Charlie in Tennessee just got us started. Thank you very, very much, Charlie. Jim tells me North Carolina, Trump, Clinton. So that completes the Confederate sweep for Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton. Now we wait on the results from Illinois and Missouri. By the way, if it is Sanders in Ohio, that's a winner take all, baby. And that is... let me see here. Yeah, that's 143 delegates to add to Bernie's total. Whoa. Cross your fingers. No, really, cross your fingers. And let's go talk to Charlie. Hey, Charlie.
How's it going?
Yeah, pretty good. How about you?
Okay. I was driving up to Kentucky last night on a service call whenever the angry Indian was on. And, I mean, that guy hit it right on the head. There's a bunch of people that claim to be Democrats, and they're just Democrats in name only. You know, they still live the life of the rich and famous and want to keep everybody else down. And I'm just wondering if there's some way where people could put pressure on Wasserman Schultz and Howard Dean, and just, you know, where, you know, say, hey, look, you know, we want Bernie. We don't want Hillary.
Well, depending on how it all plays out, Debbie Wasserman Schultz is done.
Yeah.
So, she won't be there. She won't be there for the next election cycle. Because the Democratic nominee will get to pick his or her own. Now, I just said that Jim said they're calling Ohio for Sanders with 2% of the vote in. It's Clinton 66.6% to Sanders 31.8% in Ohio, according to Chicken Noodle News. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on.
I just, you know, I can't believe down here in Tennessee that people went for Hillary. I couldn't believe it, you know.
Oh, I can. Her entire campaign strategy of inevitability was based upon her almost untouchable quality in the Confederacy.
Yeah, but why would a person of color want to vote for somebody that wants to keep them down like Hillary does? I think probably
but Charlie, Hillary doesn't go into rallies saying, hello, black America, I want to keep you down. She goes in there and talks in her fake Southern accent and gets all warm and fuzzy and talks about how good Bill's administration was for black people. Because, you know, they had a median income rise during the Clinton administration and conveniently leaves out the school-to-prison pipeline, mandatory minimums, the rise of the prison industrial complex, the crime bill, super predators. They have to be brought to heel, all of that stuff. And you know, the African-American vote is pretty much the Democratic vote in the South, because all the racist white people fled after LBJ signed the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act. Some Democrats remained, people like my parents down in Alabama, but that generation is gone now.
If you just look at it, I mean. And here is what is so frustrating. We're all humans. I don't care what color you are. I don't care what country or what part of the world your parents came from. You still have the basic same feelings and emotions and thoughts that everybody else does. And, you know, the people in the South just don't, I don't know why, they just can't get it, you know.
Well, I mean, in the case of the Clintons, they bill themselves as Southerners, and Southerners will vote for Southerners. So there's that.
But it's just wrong to treat people like that. I mean, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, but we're both Southerners, Charlie. So you won't take any umbrage when I say this. Yankees, especially Yankees who really, really sound like Yankees, Southerners don't like them. And you can't sound much more Yankee than Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think Bernie Sanders realizes that you know, we're all humans, and he wants to treat everybody just alike, and that's why I can't see why a person of color would even think about voting for Hillary Clinton.
Well, I can't either, but I'm also clothed in a whole bunch of white privilege. So
yeah, I guess you know I'm white too, so I guess I am too. I don't know. Well, I was born with cerebral palsy, so I've got that against me, but. You know, it's, I don't know. You know, you think things are going to get better in this country and they don't. And as long as, you know, black people comprise about what, 13% of the population or whatnot. And I think it was 13%. I can't remember now. But if you remove 13% from the economy, your country's not going to get along very well.
No. No.
And people just can't see that. You know, if we were to just get over the racism and everybody deal with everybody else, you know, and just look at them as equals, that this country would be in it. I mean, this isn't even a racial issue. This is an economic issue, and people are just too dumb to see it.
Yeah, but Charlie, race in this country. I spend a lot of time thinking about this, and I don't know if this country will ever get well from its racist past. I don't know if that's possible. I want to believe that it is, but just looking at the outpouring of filth that we've had since Barack Obama began running for president. And looking at the desperate attempts that he's made to reach out to terrified white America, and seeing the response that he got, You know, that's not just because, that's not just one black man and one presidency. This is a seething rage that has been fed for a generation that got turned loose. And it's like that Shakespearean phrase, you know, let slip the dogs of war.
But, you know, one caller that you've got is the guy that goes by the name Angry Indian.
Oh, Angry's a truth teller.
Yeah, his language is a little bit rough. You know, what he says, you know, you sit back and think about it, you know, it's like, well, you know, that's right. That's the way it is. And, you know, he would probably do good if he had his own show.
Oh, he does. He does his own show.
Oh, he does?
Yeah, you can find him out. He's got a podcast.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll get off here.
All right, it's good to talk to you, and thank you again for getting us started this evening. So far, you're all by yourself, Charlie, but I do appreciate it. We all do.
Well, I just had a big bill come in from Quest Diagnostics. I had some tests run about my diabetes, so. It was a little bit more than I expected. I just give what I can.
So. Well, it is profoundly appreciated.
Okie doke. I appreciate your show, and I'll talk at you later.
All right. Take care, Charlie. Bye now. Calling from Middle Tennessee, Stan. That's our buddy. That's our buddy Charlie. About a minute past the hour, and oh my goodness. Hey, Carol Baker. Come on out here on the ledge. Smoke them if you got them.
It's already lit.
Absolutely.
How you doing?
It's not terrible, but we'll get along. I mean, obviously, you know, bills to pay and all of that stuff. It gets a little creepy when we start crawling up around $500-$700, but, you know, you'll have
to. Hey, I know the feeling right here at home.
Well, we're all in the same little hand car, and we're just pumping away on a railroad that's era straight.
Yup. Oh, I just got a notification from Mother Jones. The polls just closed in Florida, and here's who won. Boom. So I have to wait for the ad to close, and then I'll tell you.
Oh, that was that's Hillary and Trump.
Yes, exactly. And why they insist upon making a big deal out of her wins in the Confederacy, where she'll never win in the general. I don't know.
Nor do I. I mean, you've got voter suppression going on all over the Confederacy, and you've got every state controlled by a Republican machine. How's that supposed to translate? But it doesn't. No, Carol, nobody in their right mind thinks that the Democratic nominee is going to carry the Confederacy. You know, Florida is always in play because Florida has a much more diverse makeup than, say, Mississippi.
But, the people that are allowed to vote.
Right. But the white folks are always going to drown out the black vote throughout the Confederacy at general election time.
Sure. Well, 1.5 million Floridians didn't get to vote. I noticed that there are only shortages of Democratic ballots in all the states, being reported in all the states. Never Republican ballots.
No, and I'm sure. Heavy Democratic precincts probably had lines around the block, you know, for one machine.
Exactly.
I mean, at least that's how it usually works. How was it at the Hooterville polling place?
Well, I went on down to the Presbyterian Church. No lightning bolts hit me. We used to be able to vote right here in Hooterville, but they decided that it was, you know, as a cost-cutting measure, they make us all go down to the Presbyterian Church down on Highway 131.
That's what I love, voting in a church.
That's right.
What could possibly go wrong?
Exactly. And the parking lot was full. And I thought, damn, this is good. And I walked in, and I was the only one voting. But there were, like, 50 workers at the polls.
Oh, I thought it was just a bunch of Trump. I thought you were going to say you walked in and there was nobody at the Democratic booth and everybody was in line to vote for Trump.
Nope, you walk in, it is a, you walk in, they go, do you want to vote for the Republicans or the Democrats? And I said, do I look like a troublemaker? Give me a Democratic vote, a ballot. She laughed, gave it to me. Of course, I had to present my passport in order to get to vote.
Nice!
So, yeah.
Driver's license doesn't count for Democrats in Missouri?
No, it does, but I don't like showing it because it just gnaws on me, and I thought, I bet this is the only one of these fuckers you guys are going to see today.
I actually kind of do. I do the same thing sometimes.
That hey. Actually has stamps in it.
Yeah, I got me a passport.
Yeah, oh, damn, she's been places.
Yeah, it probably means she's one of them commies.
Exactly.
Now,
well,
I got to tell you, that's one of the things that's getting under my skin the most among the Hilarians,
mm-hmm.
is people who were allegedly Democrats.
Yes.
Who all of a sudden are red baiting like McCarthyite Republicans.
Absolutely. And using Dr. Sean Hannity videos to prove that the Bernie bots are out in force. And I'm going, you're using Sean Hannity as a source? You're using Breitbart as a source?
I mean, I've seen that kind of stuff, right-wing stuff about Hillary. I won't post that. I won't rely on it. I seldom even read it.
I get rid of people. I don't need my news feed polluted with shit like that. I don't need it.
But
Illinois exit polls are coming in. Hard numbers to follow shortly. Show Bernie 51, Hillary 49. It's going to be close.
Oh, that 65-35 Hispanic vote might amount to something.
It might actually amount to something. And, of course, Bill went to a bunch of polling places today.
Yeah, why? What election official in their right mind allows that?
Well, unless he's actually handing out pamphlets or written materials, there's nothing illegal about it. Is it unethical? Absolutely.
I noticed Hillary went to a polling place, what, in Missouri today or Illinois maybe?
Not mine. She didn't come to the Hooterville Presbyterian Church.
No, she was over there at the Ballerina Swan Lake Trailer Court and Country Club polling place.
No, they got to vote at the community building in Odessa.
You know, the world ends over Odessa, Missouri.
I know that. I know that overpass. I sent you a picture of it once.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And it's forever stamped in my brain.
I know.
From a long, long time ago.
Exactly.
Well, I had to share my little op-ed with you.
Oh, it was fabulous. That was absolutely I think the line that made me know that you're my brother from another mother or my, yeah. Despite our apparently deep-seated fear that ISIS wants to set up an Appalachian caliphate for the 12th Imam, Jethro the Magnificent, the greatest threat to West Virginians is other armed-to-the-teeth West Virginians or varying degrees of both. And I thought, yeah, but here at the Ballerina Swan Lake Mobile Country Club Trailer Park, that would be Cletus the Conqueror.
Yeah, Cletus the Destroyer.
Yeah. Delbert the Destroyer.
Cletus the Conqueror and his minion, Delbert the Destroyer.
Yeah, deadly challenged, but armed to the teeth.
Yeah, I got up Sunday morning, or no, it was Saturday morning. And I realized it was the last day of the West Virginia legislature. And do you know those poltroons managed to sneak out of town without passing a goddamn budget?
I believe it.
They had 6 weeks. They spent all their time trying to pass a pray the gay away bill and a the obvious guns bill and getting rid of imposing right to work and getting rid of prevailing wage, mm-hmm. and the one goddamn thing that a legislature absolutely has to do, they boogied on.
And you're sitting there going, you had one job.
We are all more stupid for having heard you for the last 6 weeks.
Yes. And here in Missouri, they're passing a, you don't gotta make no gay wedding cakes for them homosexuals, you know, because it insults your Jesus bill. They're doing that.
Oh, absolutely.
And they're stopping the Islamization of Missouri because, you know, again, this is a big ISIS stronghold here.
Delbert the Destroyer.
Delbert the Destroyer and Cletus the Conqueror. They got it all under control. But yeah, it's just.
Yeah, so I sat there Saturday morning knowing that they were almost done. And I started just trying to make a laundry list of all the stupid, fucked up things they'd done. And my wrist started to cramping.
Yeah.
So I decided I would stick to, you know, one topic. And it was the gun bill. Because on the one side, there are people who say, Bob, you know, I mean, you know, if anybody can handle guns, it's West Virginians. I mean, we're hillbillies. It's like a religion to us, and it was long before there was ever an NRA. And I can't argue with that.
That's right.
I'm not crazy about concealed carry, but if there's a process you go through and a license that you buy, and there's somebody somewhere that can verify that you are minimally competent to do that, I guess I got to live with it. I don't think it's a good idea for everybody to do it, but I got to live with it. Because there are some people who I will acknowledge need to. I mean, if you're the woman who has to carry the nightly deposit of $50 gajillion across the parking lot and deposit it at the hometown Bankers Commerce Bank of Fraser's Bottom, then yeah, okay, maybe you do want a pistol. So I'm not going to sit there and bitch about it. But we've got a stupid constitutional provision in this state that says you have a constitutional right to open carry anywhere in this state.
Yep.
So that's bad enough. Well, now it wasn't good enough. So now anybody can concealed carry. How can I put this? I'm not worried. Carol, I'm not worried about movie theater shootings, you know, Colorado style, because the rest of the country's not either. We just don't. We just say, well, you know, that's going to happen because freedom, you know, Wolverines and shit. But I am worried about accidents.
Yeah.
Because, frankly, accidents happen at a higher rate than either white people mass killings or anybody else doing mass killings, which we have to call terrorism.
And it's more than that. It's the pissed off white guy that decides that, you know, he's sick and tired of being oppressed. And I just look a little too liberal for him. Or I don't stand there and nod in agreement, you know, when he tells me what a righteous man Donald Trump is. You know, and the next thing you know, oh, you're one of them. You're communist. Well, you're close, but no.
Well, you're not close. Talking about movie theaters, I'm worried about the guy who's sitting there, and he's got his penis extension in his blue jean jacket pocket. You know, the pockets on those are kind of shallow. And he goes to recline in the stadium seating there at the Octoplex.
Mm-hmm.
And the damn thing falls out of his pocket, goes through the crack in the seat, hits that hard concrete floor, and oops, blam, pray.
Sorry about that 6-year-old sitting in front of me.
Right. And our buddy Michael in Madison posted something last night with the most brilliant piece of Trumpian stream of consciousness I've ever read. Turns out, in this country, you are at more risk of being shot by a toddler
mm-hmm.
than by a terrorist.
Well, that part is true. That's definitely true.
And so, and I've had a hard time conveying this, but that's what I worry about. All these well-meaning people who don't know shit from Shinola about how to handle a gun, who are suddenly going to go out there and get them one because now they got freedom, and all the thoughts and prayers that are going to have to be going out all over these states. I mean, you got it going on there. Oklahoma's passing the same law. West Virginia's passed the law. Hey, what a coincidence. What are the odds, Carol, that legislatures in those far-flung and different states would have the same idea?
Yeah, I don't know.
Ain't enough tequila. Oh, hey, I got some breaking news, Carol.
What?
And it's the good kind.
What?
Courtesy of Bob in Texas, we have a challenge on the table for the remainder of the program. Hallelujah, glory.
Yes.
Praise Jeebus. Bob will match dollar for dollar the next 200 that come in.
Damn.
Your 1 becomes 2, your 100 becomes 200, your 200 becomes 400. Up to $200. So there we go.
Bob in Texas, have I ever told you how attractive you are?
Bob is a wonderful, wonderful friend of this program, no doubt about it. I got a story here. Sparky sent it to me, Carol.
Hit me.
Headline: iHeart Media president rushes to Texas to avoid the $20 billion bankruptcy of Hate Radio.
Ooh.
Now, you know what iHeart Radio is, right?
Yeah, sure.
They used to be Clear Channel. But then they got a little toxic via Willard Romney. And they turned themselves into iHeart Media.
Yes.
And they are $20 billion in the hole. Now, this is the company...
Yeah, I heard that they were mentioning.
Yeah, this is the company that syndicates Glenn Beck, Michael Savage, and Sean Hannity, and Flush Flembaugh. And they're $20 billion with a B in the hole. And I read that, and I go a little crazy. Because I know, for one thing, that we are here on the progressive side of things. We're putting out better radio than anything going on the right wing side.
That's true.
And a whole lot of what goes out on the progressive side. I mean, I love anybody who's got the courage to get out there and do this. But there's
you're
a few,
watching Football Day. Whoops.
There's a few people. There's
sorry.
A few people. That's okay.
I got to get
to Elvis Gunn and shoot that thing, Carol.
I wanted to pull up a story and it's got a background.
Auto run audio. Yeah, there's a special place in hell for that little bastard that invented that. But I mean, even on our side, there's a few people out there that are like listening to paint dry. No need to name names.
Yeah.
Charles Showalter. But never mind. No, we sweat out $200 a night.
Yes. And I can't figure that out.
But thank you very kindly to Bob for putting that challenge on the table. Hopefully in the next 21 minutes, it will, or 41 minutes, 41 minutes, good God, no time machine. In the next 41 minutes, it'll get met. Because God Almighty, they are bills to pay.
That's right.
Scary ones.
I know. Well, I wanted to share with you, I did not know that Donald Trump was going to be in Kansas City on Saturday night. Or I'd probably be looking for bail money. But it's actually a good thing I didn't go because I got my belly full of pepper spray in Ferguson. But there was the New York Times posted video of police preemptively soaking protesters that were behind barricades.
Yeah, it was reminiscent of nothing so much as UC Davis.
Yeah, exactly. That is exactly what it made me think of. And they were permitted to preemptively spray the protesters so as not to bother the people who were attempting the Trump rally.
I saw what you did.
And it was awful. I mean, they were down there running over people on horses and everything. It was bad. It was really bad. And I thought, well, it's probably a good thing I wasn't down there because I would have been arrested. And of course, the shit hit the fan in the Kansas legislature just on the other side of the state line today. Of course, you know, in Kansas, they call that Tuesday. Representative John Rubin of Shawnee said he was considering resigning his seat in the Kansas state legislature. Turns out he actually did it. The Speaker of the House, Ray Merrick, stripped him and another Republican of their committee chairmanships and did it from the Speaker's lectern. Didn't talk to them in advance or anything, just stripped them of their chairmanships. And he just went to his office, packed his shit, and said, I'm done. I mean, they can't even get along with each other.
Yeah, I'm going to nope out of this one. Wasn't that the phrase we had a couple of weeks back? I'm noping out. Yeah,
nope out of it.
Wow. Yeah.
Now, the Speaker of the House says that they were attempting to manipulate House rules to pull a bill out of committee. But it was all about expanding gaming in Kansas so that they could, you know, expand gambling to cover the shortfalls. And these guys were like, no, these guys that are going in here and wanting to open up these establishments aren't really savory characters. But, you know, Kansas is desperate for money.
I hate that kind of thinking, though, Carol, because what happens, you know, gambling, having, and I'm kind of a civil libertarian on it, I admit it. I think people should be able to gamble if they want to gamble. But, and you should tax the living out of it.
Absolutely.
But it's extra revenue. It is not replacement revenue.
Well, that's exactly right.
And we've seen that firsthand here in West Virginia. First, we got the lottery, and it was Powerball and, you know, mm-hmm. a daily three and a daily four and a daily six and scratch-off games. And once upon a time, you actually won once in a while on one of those scratchers.
Yep.
Not so much. But the thing is, so we were, and that money was earmarked for seniors, education, and tourism.
Yep.
Not legislative, not the, you know, not the state general fund.
Exactly.
So that was such a big hit. And I mean, I just remember this very, very well. Yeah, you know, once upon a time, any little dive bar you walked into on Capitol Street in Charleston, or you know your honky tonks and gin joints and beer halls, whatever.
Yeah,
they all had a poker machine in them.
Sure.
And you know, it had two or three different kinds of poker on it, or whatever. And the way it worked was, if you hit one, you kind of walked up to the bar and went,
hey, yeah, buddy. Because they all said for amusement only,
right?
But but the bartenders would pay you off.
Yeah, you go, hey, buddy, and he goes, oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
So the state looked at that and, in its wisdom, said, well, look, these things are illegal as fuck.
Yeah.
But instead of getting all untouchables and running in and pulling them all out and getting ourselves in trouble with the mob that runs the companies that, you know, has the machines.
Yeah.
Why don't we just sort of bring them into the loving embrace of the law? And we'll fix the number of machines that there are in this state, and we'll regulate it, and we'll use the proceeds to blah, blah. And then, of course, they immediately began doing things like we had a food tax here in West Virginia. So nothing would do, but we had to get rid of the food tax. Kind of hard to piss and moan about that, because that's another damn regressive tax that
exactly.
That gets paid disproportionately by people who are struggling to eat food. So there, so consequently, instead of that being an augment to state proceeds, it becomes an excuse for legislators to say, let's cut taxes because it's your money.
Yeah.
And you wind up with at best a wash and at worst in a hole.
Exactly. We did it here in Missouri.
Yep, just like Mark Twain talking about the lady in Connecticut selling her house, walking around. She said everything was cleaned out. She walked into the kitchen, said, goodbye, kitchen. I'm moving to Missouri. She walked into the parlor and said, goodbye, parlor. I'm moving to Missouri. Walked out onto the porch and said, goodbye, porch. I'm moving to Missouri. Walked out, looked up at the sky and said, goodbye, God. I'm moving to Missouri. And Twain said people misunderstood her in that last. What she actually said was, good.
Good God.
By God, I'm moving to Missouri.
Missouri.
I always loved that one.
But
as with so many parts of the United States, what was lovable about a lot of them has been absolutely ruined by conservatism.
Yeah.
I mean, Missouri has not always been insane.
No, Missouri was a bellwether state for years.
North Carolina was the shining gem of the South.
Yep.
Breaking news coming in from Jack in Shreveport.
Yes.
Get out your big bottle of crocodile tears so you don't have to try to generate any of your own.
Yes.
Marco Rubio has suspended his campaign.
I'm shocked. I'm stunned. Please hold me back. Yeah. I may jump.
Oh, poor Marco. If only we hadn't gotten to know you better. I hope it didn't hurt too little.
I was getting the hint when all of the ads that were coming up on YouTube this afternoon. While I was trying to watch my documentaries, it was Trump, Cruz. And I thought, oh, little Marco doesn't have any money for this, even. And those ads are just awful.
Oh, they're terrible. Hey, by the way, good news. Thanks to Michael and Thomas and Charlene, we have met $115 of Bob's challenge. So this can happen.
You are all so attractive.
yes, aren't they? Yes.
Yes.
Marty points out, Rubio's suspended his campaign. Oh, no. Nicole Sandler will be so disappointed. Yeah, or not.
Politicus just said, Trump denies promising to pay his violent supporters legal fees because we don't have it on video.
He only said that on Meet the Freakin' Press.
Yeah. When are they going to figure it out that he's going to turn on him?
Well, okay. So here's something fun for you.
Yeah.
Did you hear about the audio that's out there?
Which one?
Well, Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton was having her little sit-down confab with neutral, absolutely objective, real journalist Chris Matthews, whose wife is definitely not running for Congress in Maryland and has definitely not taken absolute boatloads of money from Dr. First Lady Secretary Clinton's campaign or her bundlers or her pals or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And it just so happened there was a mic left open.
Hot damn, this is
not a parody. This is not satire. This is how they talk when they think no one's listening. And it turned to Trump. You ready for this?
good.
Yeah. I was watching Chris Christie talk to you. You know, wingback chairs are the enemy of overweight people. So he does this.
Oh.
Every time I do the Tonight Show.
Did you see him?
They did a live show today, and it was on the ceiling. And...
yeah, you guys can't stop covering him. I mean, he is a dangerous presence. And you know, it's just like, you know, candy buzz.
Well, show you that. We have a mixture of them. Dip into them, dip out of them. And we have a progressive audience, obviously. And, but nobody can tell what people want to watch.
Yeah. People think they want to watch him.
You laugh at him.
Why did he support
him? Because they're chatting. They all want a future. They want a future. Christie doesn't.
You think
Christie's not going to be Cory.
Did he have a dad?
Cory Booker is there.
What?
Cory Booker's not going anywhere. There's nowhere for Christie to go. Unless Menendez has to go.
I don't think he can win right now.
Not in Jersey, no. I don't think he can win as a Senate candidate either. A Republican Senate candidate in Jersey. It's a long time ago.
This is such a
I've known Carson forever, and I don't,
yeah.
I've known him forever.
Did you know he was at Johns Hopkins?
No, we used to this travel around the world group called the Academy of Achievement, and it's all people like DNA, guys who invented DNA, guys who did this, they got inclined. Mount Everest the first time, and the guy who had the first format. It's an amazing group of people. And I'm in it. And we go around the world, Cape Town, Honolulu, everywhere. And so I got to know him and his wife. He was very soft spoken, never said a thing. And all of a sudden.
I mean, he was a brilliant surgeon by all accounts.
Yeah. It's a funny, so he has a Tommy Smothers voice, though, which is kind of funny. It's very slow. Remember Tommy Smothers?
I do very well. Well. The Smothers Brothers.
I remember them.
It's so funny when I talk about things like that with my staff that are so young.
try Sid Caesar. Okay, try Sid Caesar. Try Sid Caesar.
Okay. Ed Sullivan.
Oh, God.
Yeah, chums.
Yeah, what they talk about when they think we're not listening.
Yeah.
But, the best part of it, though, is Hillary saying, you know, why did Christie support Trump? Did he, and it kind of gets over-talked, but did he have a debt?
Mm-hmm.
Dr. First Lady Senator Secretary Clinton, he wants to be Attorney General of the United States so he can shut down the investigation, any investigation, of himself or him's cronies.
That's right.
But I love the whole, you guys can't quit covering him part.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I got to thinking about it, and I watched Matthews interview her, and he said flat out, he said to her face that she's presidential material, and he made no bones that he's backing her. And I thought, how is this journalism? This is an infomercial for her. And then Bernie has to sit across from Chump Toad, who mocks him for an hour. And I went back and I started digging today for some video of Chris Matthews getting in Phil Donahue's face back when the war first started.
Right.
And Chris Matthews basically looked at Phil Donahue in the face and he said, "You're everything that's wrong with America. This is the greatest country in the world, and all you ever do is see things that are wrong with it. And your opposition and to this war is anti-American." And I mean, it was like watching McCarthy. And Phil Donahue, you could just tell. I mean, this is a calm guy, but he tried to say one thing and got overtalked, and Matthews just destroyed him. And this is a video that goes on for like 15 minutes. And it's a montage of Chris Matthews in the beginning being such a war hawk, and then today sitting there disparaging the people who didn't do enough to stop it. And Seton egged it on. And then there's this beautiful piece where Amy Goodman confronts Chris Matthews for getting Phil Donahue fired. I don't know why he was fired. Yeah, you do, because we got a hold of the secret memo from MSNBC where you demanded it.
Exactly.
I don't know anything about that.
Well, but at that point in time, MSNBC was part of the run-up to the war.
Mm-hmm.
And so naturally, there's not going to be a lot of criticism of, and again, I come back to it. I'm sorry. I wish it were different. I wish this was not even available for me to say. Her terrible, awful, very bad, no good judgment.
Well, it was. And it was interesting because I heard him pounding on her about the Iraq war. It was the only thing that he ever really was kind of challenging her on. And I kept watching it going, Bob's right. She doesn't have a short answer in it. Instead of just saying, I was wrong, my vote was wrong, I can't take it back, history is what it is, move on. We've learned. And instead, she kept explaining it away and parsing it and justifying it.
It's like the way she interrogated the woman with the high insurance premiums Sunday night.
Exactly. That's exactly it.
A woman standing there pouring out her heart saying that, you know, and she gets interrogated by a millionaire. Yeah. I mean, how politically, and you know, this is not a slur on the hearing impaired, how politically tone deaf do you have to be to do something like that? In the open mic business there, did you catch the fat shaming going on at the beginning?
Yes.
You ever seen how he sits in a chair? He sits like this. No. I mean, honest to Pete.
I know. So I sit there and I look at all this craziness and you know, this whole Trump thing hasn't been funny to me for a long, long time.
I don't know that it ever was.
I mean, in the beginning, it was just so bizarre that you would you had this nervous laughter about it in the beginning because you were like, they're going to kill him. They're going to kill him. No American's going to put up with this. And then you watch all of these uneducated stumps who have constitutional law degrees that they got off of Facebook. And suddenly, you know, there's this total disdain and scorn for anyone who went to college. For anybody who went and got paid for a formal education from scholars and real thinkers. And, you know, I've always said if I had to do it over, the longer I listen to the marvelously coherent Diane, the more I wish I was closer so that I could just audit her class.
Oh, no kidding.
On business ethics. Because I find the whole topic fascinating. And I sit and I listen to a woman who is in awe of millennials who are able to see things very clearly and kind of distill it down to its lowest common denominator. And she's sitting there going, wow, they're like 6 months ahead of the game here from where we were planning on teaching them. So now she sees real excitement because of where she's going to be able to take the conversation because they're so engaged in the topic. So, you know, I listen to these scholars and these thinkers and the kids that they're teaching, and it's exciting to me. And I love listening to educated people, and I like good writers, and I like
And you know that those students have a fighting chance, right?
Well, they will if they're not so, you know,
encumbered by
the yoke of debt.
Right, but they've got a fighting chance with their minds, is what I'm getting.
Oh, absolutely.
And so consequently, that's why we've got to stop kids going to college.
Yeah. Well, that seems to be their mission these days. And Of course, Paul Krugman in the New York Times took today to explain once again how batshit crazy Bernie is and why he's so in the back. He's completely dismissive of everybody and everything that he's ever made fun of, which I don't get. I love Paul Krugman, but he's gone insane during this election season. Well, and it's not that he supports Hillary. It's his hammering on attacking Bernie.
Well, there's marching orders coming down from the penthouse there at the New York Times. I mean, they've become a Hillary transcription service.
We can pay $1.3 trillion for a jet that won't fly, but free college is out of the question. I mean, that's just common sense. That's a guy sitting there looking at numbers on a paper going, well, that's easy. We'll just stop spending money on that.
You would think. But the thing is, there's always another $1 trillion jet just around the corner.
But clearly, I don't know how.
But
we
value $1 trillion jets, even if they don't fly worth a fuck. Those are important because we can bomb brown people with that, and somebody's got to build the bombs that we drop on the brown people. So economy, because capitalism, because money.
If you can't get the ground, they're not going to bomb anybody with it.
But you can't as easily liquidate a college kid.
No, you will.
Unless you send them to the military to bomb the brown people.
That's true, because those are the kids that get sent first.
Meanwhile, from Steve in New York, a question for you and Carol. After that off-mic conversation, how can any self-respecting anyone vote for her? Well, I had my little moment earlier today, and I'm sure you saw the same thing I saw.
Yes.
It was published, I think, at The Hill.
Yes.
Which is not the National Enquirer.
No.
It was from Nancy Reagan's funeral.
Mm-hmm.
And it was of George W. Bush
hugging,
with his arm wrapped around Hillary Clinton, hugging her.
With a coffee cup in the other hand.
With a coffee cup in the other hand, and they're both grinning like foxes trying to eat shit out of wire brushes.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe this just shows that, well, you know, I don't have the right temperament for understanding the essential nature of the give and takes of political comity in the United States. But you know what? That pissed me right the fuck off.
We dine with the snotheads at 8.
Get there early. There'll be a line for the vomitorium, Muffy, I'm sure. There always is at their house.
I love that.
But, I mean, really. And what I said at the time was, you know, if I was a true blue diehard Hilarian,
yeah,
I'd be feeling kind of icky over that.
Well, yeah.
First she makes the diehard true blue hardcore Hilarians defend Henry goddamn Kissinger.
Oh, yeah.
And then, just to rub their noses in it a little bit, yes, yeah, smell it. She makes him defend her hugging on Bush.
Yep.
And, of course, the stock answers, well, you know, I mean, it's a funeral, and people put their petty differences aside, and horse shit.
No, they don't.
Anybody who's ever been to a funeral of someone who, you know, had been through a couple of divorces, there's an ex-spouse in one corner, an ex-spouse in the other corner, and back in the furthest back row of the parlor, there's another spouse.
And the children of all of them are on the opposite walls.
Right, and nobody's talking. Court.
But they're holding court with their personal friends.
But, I mean, you get my point.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Hillary, you're running for president, dear. Don't go hug the war criminal. Mustn't hug the war criminal. This guy who's running her campaign is some cat named Robbie Mook.
Yes.
What Carol, what are they saying to her?
No,
Hillary, go hug George Bush real good. The optics will be great. It'll bring in the middle of the road Republicans.
That's what they're telling her. That's exactly what they're telling her.
Nah. The progressives will vote for you. It's like Bill. We told them, where have you got to go? What are you going to do? Vote for Perot? They'll come around, Hillary. They'll vote for you. Jesus, you could kiss him right on the mouth, and they'd still have to vote for you just to keep it from being Trump.
Yes.
And I'm offended by that.
I'm offended by that as well.
I mean, hugging on George W. Bush, is that more of that pragmatic progressivism?
Well,
liberalism, that realism?
The practical progressive hugs the compassionate conservatives.
Oh, shit. Wow.
Hey, I'm just saying.
You know, you could do this shit for a living.
I've been told that. My former producer told me that.
Oh, we just got a postcard from the road.
We did? What?
From Jennifer.
Yes.
Jennifer, you may recall, left her home and her comfort there in Perth in Western Australia.
Did to come home and work for Bernie. Yes.
And she said, that's it, Carol and Bob, what you said just now, thought I'd better share this postcard from the road. Wish you were here. It seems right here. The trees are the right height, and I love the lakes, but the trees are the right height.
I love that girl.
But the natives are restless, to my bewildered dismay and alienation. People here say Trump is entertaining everyone from the most dim-witted plebeian Philistine to the most savvy progressive, says he may be dooming us to a brutal end, but at least he's entertaining. What the fuck? That's Jennifer, not me. It was what the WTF, but I mean, I just gave voice to it. I have never for an instant, ever, found that vulgarian's promise lies in the least entertaining. Anyway, last night we all drank ourselves stupid under the stars, though slushy. It was pleasantly cool in a way it can never be cold down under. Down under. There we go. Hey, takes a minute. I saw a raccoon that in my haze may have been a long-tailed weasel, LOL. It too got so drunk that together, well, we both, and ... But, you know, Jennifer, that just inspired the hell out of me.
A long-tailed weasel, honey. It was a Republican. You were drunk, but you weren't that drunk.
It wasn't a long-tailed weasel. That was Melania. Yeah, smoke a turd and help.
Speaking of which, can you imagine what the White House Christmas card's going to look like?
Ixnay on the Isthmus Cray RK.
I'm just saying. A bearskin rug in the middle of the oval. Her splayed seductively. Southerners are going to love it.
On one elbow. You know, they say that never. Oh, Jesus, I'm going to burn. Stop it. You're just trying to get entries added to the ledger. That's all you're doing.
Hey, I'm good.
Something else to share with you. I told you.
Yes.
I told you how unutterably funny what Michael did, his stream of consciousness about Trump talking about toddlers shooting.
Yes. Right?
Yeah. Let's see here. I'll have it in a second. I read this to Agnes last night, and she really did, no kidding. She shot ginger ale out her nose.
But the Viking warrior princess did it in the most regal way.
She did it intimidatingly. Still. Hold on. We'll get there. Here we go. Now, let's understand. My Trump sucks, okay? And this is Michael and Madison's work, and Michael is brilliant.
Yes.
You know,
I've been seeing a lot about this lately, and I've been saying we really need to take a look at these toddlers. We have to start taking a look at the toddlers. We really do. They're shooting everybody. Just shooting everybody, these toddlers. Worse than the terrorists in some cases. In some cases, worse than the terrorists, who are also really bad dudes. And we need to ship them out of here. But the toddlers, it's definitely an issue we'll be taking a look at. And whatever we do, I can assure you it is going to be really great. It's going to be terrific. You're going to love what we do about the toddler issue. I'm going to put the best people in charge, the best people. Because these politicians, they don't put the best people in charge. They put a bunch of morons in charge. Morons. Can you believe that? They put total losers in charge. And that's what you get when you elect these losers. But no, when I'm president, it'll be great. I can tell you that. We're going to take care of the toddler problem in a big way. Bigly way. It'll be huge. Oh, and another thing is, these politicians, they don't know how to cut deals. Have I mentioned that? I've been saying that. They don't know how to cut deals. So maybe we sit down with some of those toddlers and we cut a really good deal. Like, you don't shoot mommy with a loaded gun and maybe you'll get some fruit snacks that are shaped like the R2-D2 in the Harry Potter. And we'll make the toddlers pay for the fruit snacks. It'll be such a good deal. I know how to make deals. I really know how to make deals. That's what I do. Maybe we'll come up with some new fruit snacks that look like me and my wife and my daughter. She's really hot, isn't she, folks? I mean, I'd really like to date her myself, but you can't date your daughter. You just can't do that. I mean, like I've said, I could shoot someone in the middle of Fifth Avenue, maybe one of these toddler thugs. You know, these young people, they all support this Bernie Sanders character. Can you believe that? It's unbelievable. Bernie, this guy, he's practically a communist, and he sends his thugs to break up my rallies, these young thugs. I mean, it's not the women. I'll give that to Hillary. It's not her women. You don't see a lot of these Chicago thugs bleeding out of their eyes and ears and their wherevers. There's just no enthusiasm there. It's these young thugs for Bernie stirring up all this trouble. Such violence. It's unacceptable. We got to just knock the hell out of these people. Really knock the hell out of them. What was I saying, though? Oh, yeah, you can't date your daughter, even if she's really hot. Isn't that crazy? But, I mean, I could shoot one of these toddler thugs, these communist toddlers, these disruptors who get their orders from Bernie. I could shoot one of these toddlers right in the head in broad daylight, and my poll numbers would go up. They'd go up. So maybe that's what we need to do. Maybe that's it. We need to shoot some of these toddlers before they shoot us. Or maybe we need to build a wall around their playroom, the big, beautiful door. It's going to be so beautiful. You're just going to love this door. I can't wait for you to see it. It's going to be so great, so great. And the wall, believe me, it'll be way too high for any toddler to climb over it. That's one good thing about toddlers. They're not good climbers. They're really not good climbers. As long as you bolt down the furniture and keep it away from the wall, they're not getting over that wall. Trust me, it's going to be great. But maybe some of these toddlers will need to round them up. Just round them up and ship them back where they came from. Just jam them right back up mommy's womb until they learn how to behave with these guns. I mean, these guns are great, right? That's what I keep hearing. People keep telling me these guns are great. And when I'm president, we'll have so much more with the guns. We won't be playing games with the guns. So many more guns. And these kids are going to have to learn to behave with these guns or they just can't come out of the womb. And this is going to be really great for women, really great. The women are going to just love this. They love to be pregnant. They love it. 9 months, 10 months, in some cases, that's just not long enough. I'm going to be so great on the women's issues. These toddlers are not going to be shooting mommy in the back when I'm president, believe me. And you know, Chuck, if you'll just let me finish. Can I finish here, Chuck? Listen, Chuck, okay? When I'm president, we will deal with these toddlers, okay? No, I'm not going to answer that question. That's a really nasty question, Chuck. And if you just let me finish, you'd understand that. Yes, some of these toddlers, I'm sure they're good people. My daughter was a toddler once, and she never shot a gun at me or her mother. And look how beautiful she is now. I mean, just look at her, Chuck. Look at her. I know what you're thinking, Chuck. Believe me, I think about it myself quite a lot. So sure, some of these toddlers, as I've been saying, are probably good people. And that's where the Trump Snacks brand fruit-flavored snacks come in. We'll use those to make deals with these toddlers, the ones who aren't thugs, and we'll make the toddlers pay for the Trump Snacks, the fruit-flavored snacks. We'll make the Trump Snacks right here in America, bring the jobs back. It'll be great for the jobs, really great, okay? Okay, no questions.
Trump Michael, snacks are made in China.
With poison, absolutely. But Michael definitely gets, Michael gets the toaster with, like, the bagel wide and the extra slices.
No. He gets a toaster oven.
Okay. Oh, a convection toaster oven.
A convection toaster oven. Just because he made it through that, I'm assuming, without falling into a coma.
It's one it's one long paragraph. It is hell. It's just one long stream of consciousness paragraph. It's like I don't know. It's like it's dropping it's like dropping acid and then reading Faulkner.
Oh. Oh. Oh, breaking. MSNBC is calling Ohio for Clinton, but CNN is holding off. They had an exit poll showing Bernie up by 2 points. But this isn't good.
I
really wanted him to get Ohio.
I did too.
Of all of them. Because now, even if he wins everything else, then she gets to go do her victory lap about how many more voters voted for her today and compared to the Bernie voters. And so all of his states get wiped out. And
yeah, they still got to count them.
They've still got to count them.
I wonder at the time the polls closed and they called the state, I wonder how many people were still standing in line.
I'd like to know that too. And with it being 2%, I think it might have been a little premature. So, yeah. But it ain't over. It ain't over.
It ain't over. And we've had a lovely little time out here on the ledge, Carol Baker.
We have. And I thank you for allowing me to join you. But I shall toddle off and let you finish up your housekeeping and...
Alrighty. Before you go, quick note from the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansas, Stan.
Yes.
Kansas and Carol. Carol, thanks for your comments about my students. I wish you could join us in class. One student group has decided to present the case of Flint, Michigan. It was their choice. They were struck by the fact that some time ago GM had decided not to use Flint's water in their manufacturing plant, but it was okay for children to drink it. These MBA students, all males in this group, are very concerned. Their natural pragmatism will help them organize the facts and derive conclusions and recommendations, and the organizing principle they will naturally gravitate to will be community well-being.
And that is why I sleep at night, Diane.
Exactly. By the way, Steve says, in New York, says, regarding that big old hug we were talking about.
Yes.
A handshake would have been understandable.
But a reach around was just too much.
Oh, and with that, we put our cigarettes out and flick them on the Republicans 40 stories below.
Yeehaw! Talk to you later.
All right. Take care, Carol. Bye.
Have a good one.
All right. Bob's challenge has been met. We have $85 to close the gap completely and catch up with where we need to be going into prayer meeting Wednesday tomorrow. $85 to go. Thank you very kindly to Mark. Thank you to Charlie. Thank you to Michael. Thank you to Thomas. Thank you to Charlene. And thank you very kindly, Bob, in Texas, for making the challenge. That was tremendous. Time to get out of here. Thanks to all of you for keeping this on the air. And thanks to you for your calls, your commentary, your emails, your tweets, your Facebook responses. Thank you for all the different ways that you participate in this ongoing conversation. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Get well, Gene and Ann. We're thinking of you. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.